I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
Through this bill, the governor's office wants to send a strong message to gang members. You come after our children and endanger our communities, and we will come after you.
Some Georgia Republicans want to stiffen mandatory minimum sentences.
Members of the GOP are also bringing back the fight for Buckhead cityhood.
Colleagues, I found myself exhausted, tried, tired of the sound bites, the messaging, going through the motions.
Also back, the debate over allowing heavier trucks on Georgia's roads.
I've been asked many times in interviews what keeps me up at night. Since HB 189 has come out, I hadn't been sleeping well.
Plus, Vice President Harris flew to Atlanta to talk about climate change.
The clock is not just ticking, it's like banging.
We'll talk with WABE environment reporter Emily Jones. I'm Sam Greenglass, WABE politics reporter.
And I'm Raul Bally, also a politics reporter at WABE. It's week 6 of the Georgia General Assembly, and this is Gold Dome Scramble, a pop-up podcast from Political Breakfast and WABE News in Atlanta.
So, Raul, I have a bone to pick with you, and that is all of the time that lawmakers waste under the Gold Dome. I am convinced now in my second session that you could do these things in half the time if you cut out pastor of the day, doctor of the day, the string of birthday announcements and recognizing grandchildren and community members, and then they gavel out after an hour of all of that riffraff. And my thinking is that if you reform the system, cut through all of that stuff, we could be in and out in 20 days.
So look, Sam, this is just part of what the legislature does. You mentioned a few of the things, but there's also the local chambers of commerce, the beauty queens, the sports teams, the moments of silence. I mean, but that's part of this. That's part of the experience. Is it part of the experience of the people who come up to the Capitol? So, and you know what? When you mentioned it to me earlier this week, I actually timed it. On one of the days, it took up 42 minutes of time with all of those things that you were mentioning, including your favorite thing, the state Senate doing both Pledge of Allegiances, first to the U.S. flag and then to the Georgia flag. But all of that said, yes, it's a fair point. How slowly the legislature starts, all of these things that are done. And then when it gets to crunch time, you get that common excuse that we've run out of time or this is not a priority.
Well, at least I know when I'm running late to the Capitol that usually I'm not missing anything.
You're not. So let's get to the meat. You know, Sam, we talked about how crime was a big issue on the 2022 campaign, and that's now carried into this legislative session. This past week, Republican lawmakers debated a bill that would stiffen mandatory minimum sentences for gang-related crimes. Talk about that.
So gang-related crimes would trigger this extra 5 years in prison at minimum. And judges would have far less leeway than they do right now to convert some of that time into parole. This bill also toughens sentences for people who involve someone under 18 in a crime or someone with a disability. That would carry a mandatory minimum of 10 years instead of that 5. And the bill's sponsors are kind of framing this piece as targeting gang recruitment specifically. The backdrop to all of this is that Georgia already has one of the highest incarceration rates in the country, and the state's prison population is disproportionately Black. So there have been efforts at reform in recent years, really going back to Republican Governor Nathan Deal. Mandatory minimums, cash bail, all have been kind of the target for changes to make a reduction in some of these incarceration rates in Georgia. Another backdrop to this, though, is that it is true that some violent crimes have been on the rise in Georgia since the start of the pandemic specifically, but reformers say that stiffer sentencing, as we've been talking about, is not the way to fix that problem. But, you know, Republicans, they have really been honing in on crime, as you've mentioned, on this tough on crime approach. At the top of the show, we heard that tape that was from Senator Beau Hatchett saying, you know, gangs, you should be on notice. That is rhetoric that we're hearing from a lot of Republicans. Another thing, though, that strikes me that this conversation about crime is also fueling, that has been the push for Buckhead cityhood, which we really talked a lot about last year. It ended up not making it through the legislature last session. But now, Raul, in the context of all of this crime rhetoric, I'm hearing it is coming back, even though I thought it was dead, right?
So it's not dead. Senate Bill 114, which is the main legislation, it's been filed. It would allow residents of the affluent Buckhead neighborhood to vote on breaking away from the city of Atlanta. Look, here's the bottom line. The supporters of Buckhead cityhood, their number one issue that they keep bringing up is crime, increasing crime and violent crime. But you know what? As you mentioned, crime and violent crime are rising, not just in urban areas like Atlanta and Buckhead, but across the state in rural areas as well. So their focus on this argument is mentioning specific crimes and specific high-profile incidents, but that crime argument is going to be a challenge. And here's the other challenge. Mayor Andre Dickens, the mayor of the city of Atlanta, has made major inroads in the state capitol, has made major inroads in improving relationships with state leaders. And he is counting on that to keep this legislation from moving forward. And that lawmakers who are focused on public safety and crime focus on other issues and not Buckhead cityhood. It's going to be a real uphill challenge for this legislation to get through. And there's a whole litany, which I'm not going to cover right now, of other legal and financial issues to get Buckhead cityhood done. Now let's talk about another thing that faces a real uphill challenge, and this is the idea of moving up Georgia's 2024 presidential primaries, specifically the Democratic primary. Sam, this has been something you've been watching the squabbling on this.
I think Democrats at this point, at least publicly, would still quibble with that idea that this is DOA. But if we're being realistic here, all signs kind of point that there are still a lot of roadblocks to making this early nominating primary for Georgia happen. And why is that? Well, remember, Georgia's Republican Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, he is the one in charge of setting this date. But that is not totally a unilateral decision because he's also bound by the rules of the Republican National Committee, who has already set the dates that they want to be in their early nominating calendar. And that does not include Georgia. And so if Georgia tries to get into that mix, they could actually be penalized. So Raffensperger has said he's not going to do that. He's not going to move up Georgia's date to the early calendar as Democrats hope it will be. So Raffensperger has said, you know, he likes this idea, but doesn't want to see it happen in 2024 because of those rules. He said we have to look forward to 2028. That is a long time away. But I want to turn to something that happened in the last couple of days, which was this really long committee meeting on heavy trucks. Raul, you were there. I watched the very beginning of this. You kept with it the whole time. Did you stay awake? Did you make it through? Tell me what happened in the end.
So I did have to step out, you know, because my eyes were closing. And by the way, a second reporter also walked out with me to go hit the Coke machine. This was scheduled to be 2 hours. It ended up going 5.5, almost 6. It went much longer than anybody expected. I had to step out, do carpool with the kids and all that. So while I had this hearing on in the back.
Were you driving a heavy truck to carpool though?
I have a minivan, but not I do not have a heavy truck. Look, this was such an interesting hearing because of of who's involved in these fights, powerful forces on both sides. The basic bill is, right now, interstate highways and Georgia roads and streets, the ones you and I drive on, are allowed a max of 80,000 pounds for a truck. This legislation would take that number up to 90,000 on all roads except interstates, because interstates are handled by the feds. On one side, you had major important businesses in Georgia like the agriculture industry, the forestry industry. And on the other side, you had city, county, and state officials. You had safety advocates. It comes down to, so if you put these heavier trucks on the road, that's good for business. They brought up the driver shortage. But on the other side, you had safety advocates say, look, you add 5 tons to a truck, that's going to make it even harder to stop. So you had all of these discussions and issues, and you have powerful forces. The bill did get out of committee. It did, you know, it cleared the committee. But let me tell you something. It's interesting because you saw such powerful forces. You saw some lawmakers cross over on this issue. Local government saying this is going to cost us money. You had the Georgia Transportation Commissioner saying this is going to cost billions of dollars, because when you make the trucks that much heavier, it's not a step up in weight, it's exponential.
And we will have a chance to talk more about this next week. Gold Dome Scramble will be taping our podcast on the campus of Kennesaw University at 6:30 p.m. next Thursday, February 16th. And joining us will be the chair of the Transportation Committee, Representative Rick Jasper. So we'll have a lot more time to dig into heavy trucks and everything else happening under the Gold Dome.
I'll give you a preview of one question I'm going to love to ask him. You know how they decided who would go first, pro or con?
It was a coin flip, right?
It was a coin flip. I want to ask why he did a coin flip to decide that. It was one of the interesting moments of that hearing. So, and then also joining us is going to be Democratic State Senator Sonia Halpern, and she's been involved with some interesting issues, including HBCUs. And of course, she is one of the state senators who represents Buckhead in the state legislature. So another one of our great guests who's going to join us at Kennesaw State University.
And you can go to wabe.org/events for more details and to RSVP. Let's take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about environmental policy and how it overlaps with the legislature, from electric vehicles to solar panels and mining. I'm Sam Greenglass, and this is Gold Dome Scramble, a pop-up podcast from Political Breakfast and WABE.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Support for WABE's local coverage on maternal health and mortality comes from Georgia Health Initiative, whose mission is to inspire and promote collective action that advances health equity for all Georgians. Learn more at GeorgiaHealthInitiative.org.
Welcome back to Gold Dome Scramble. We're joined now by Emily Jones, environment reporter for WABE and Grist. Hey, Emily.
Hey, guys.
Okay, Emily, before we get into it, can I just ask, as WABE's environment reporter, what is your favorite Georgia state park and why?
I'm going to have to say Skidaway Island, because I live in Savannah, so it's only like 10 minutes from my house, and the marsh views there are absolutely breathtaking. And it's just a beautiful place to go walk some trails, soak up some nature. I saw a painted bunting there once, which is a really cool kind of bird. And also my dog really likes chasing the fiddler crabs there. So it's pretty great.
I think my answer is, I always struggle to pronounce the name, but Amicalola Falls. I think that's right. That's my favorite place.
I would have to say Sweetwater Creek, which is just west of Atlanta. It's got some old mill ruins out there. It's just kind of a fun, quirky walk. Me and the kids, we love hiking and definitely biking.
Everyone visit your state parks. There's so many of them, and they're so pretty.
So, Emily, so much for us to dig into. Let's start off with one of the controversies at the state capitol, and that deals with the efforts to mine titanium near the Okefenokee Swamp. That's near the Georgia-Florida border down your way. First, describe the Okefenokee and tell us about this conflict.
Well, speaking of state parks, you should definitely check out Stephen C. Foster State Park if you haven't. That is part of the Okefenokee. There's also a National Wildlife Refuge on the other side of the Okefenokee. It's this absolutely massive swamp in southeast Georgia, and it's a habitat for thousands of species, red-cockaded woodpeckers, gopher tortoises, of course, alligators. It's also one of the most intact places of its kind, more so than the Everglades or the Dismal Swamp in North Carolina. And it's incredibly popular with tourists. You can paddle it in a canoe or kayak. That's my personal favorite. Or you can take a tour in a powerboat. You can camp there. You can hike there. The area around it, though, also has this super sandy, mineral-rich soil. And that's where the mining comes in. A company called Twin Pines wants to set up a mine outside the swamp itself, but it's on this geological feature called Trail Ridge. That ridge runs to the east of the Okefenokee, and it plays a key role in keeping water in the swamp, basically. So a lot of scientists and environmental activists are worried that if you start digging it up, you're going to mess with the hydrology, the system of water that keeps the swamp intact. And that could ruin the swamp, or at least permanently change it.
So where does the legislature step into this debate and this fight?
Sure. So the mine needs permits from the Department of Natural Resources if it wants to operate. The first permit for the first phase is already going through that DNR process. They're accepting public comment on it as we speak, actually. But the mining company plans to expand beyond this first phase. And so there is a bill that's before the legislature right now that would stop that from happening. The bill would block DNR from issuing permits for future mining, anything beyond the footprint of this first phase. So if they want to expand, if they want to make it bigger, which they have said they want to do, this bill, if it passes, would stop that from happening. But a similar bill, I should say, didn't go anywhere last year. So we don't know yet what the outlook is like for this bill this year.
So, Emily, it sounds like there will be very likely some kind of mining near the swamp. The real question at hand is how expansive it will be.
I don't think I would be quite that definite about the idea that there will be some. I mean, the opponents of the mine are fighting really hard to stop even this first permit from being issued. They are really pushing for people to weigh in, to make public comments, to go to the meetings about it and oppose this. And I should say there has been some pretty vocal and strong opposition to this from the very beginning. And then after this permit, so the permit that's under consideration right now is a land use permit, there also will be a second round of all of this for the surface mining permit. So even if they issue the land use permit, there's going to be another sort of pitched battle again around the surface use permit. So both of those, I would say, are still very much up in the air. The folks that are opposed to the mine are definitely still hopeful that they're going to be able to stop even those first permits from being issued. The bill that's been introduced in the legislature, the idea with that is like, well, these permits are already underway, so it's kind of hard for the legislature to step in and stop them. But they're trying to stop it from getting any bigger, even if these first permits are issued. Does that make sense?
Yeah, a lot to keep an eye on there for sure.
And Emily, just one quick thing. We should point out that this doesn't necessarily fall along Republican-Democrat lines.
It doesn't. That's true. I mean, the lead sponsor of the bill that we've been talking about is Darlene Taylor. She's a Republican. And this is one of those things that comes up in conservation in Georgia. A lot of people love the Okefenokee Swamp and they love to go paddling or go in their boats. I mean, it does cut across party lines because a lot of people, no matter what their political affiliation, really love and value the swamp.
I want to turn now to a hot topic under the Gold Dome, and that is electric vehicles. It is a growing industry here in Georgia with new investments from Rivian, Hyundai, and other battery makers. But there's some disagreement about the rules and regulations that have to do with electric vehicles. I wonder if, can you just give us a little bit of a rundown about what's being talked about right now?
Yeah, there's a huge laundry list of issues that come with electric vehicles. Not so much with the manufacturing that you mentioned, but if people are going to be driving them, you have to figure out all kinds of things. You have to figure out how sales work, how charging are going to work. You also have to figure out how to fund a Department of Transportation that historically has gotten a lot of its funding from gas taxes. So a study committee looked at all of these issues last year, and now they're working on writing laws around their findings. And those are going to deal with all kinds of things. To this point, the EV companies have preferred to sell directly to consumers. So like if you buy a Tesla, you buy it straight from Tesla. You don't go to a dealership like you do with a normal car. That's not currently allowed. And so that's one question is, will the state allow the EV makers to do that? Or will they, you know, say, no, you have to have dealerships just like every other car? There's also the question of whether gas stations can put in EV chargers and then sell electric power directly to the consumer, because currently that's only something that a power company can do, right? There's, as I mentioned, the concern of funding the Georgia Department of Transportation. Right now, we all pay fuel taxes, but if more people are going to be driving electric vehicles and not driving gas-powered cars, not buying gas, you have to fund the GDOT somehow. Right now, there's a flat annual fee, but there's some talk about whether there's a way to make that a little bit more dynamic, whether there's a way to sort of track mileage and have people pay by mileage instead of a flat fee. So it's a little more similar to a gas tax where you pay based on how much gas you buy. And, you know, then there's the question of it's not just, you know, convenience stores, gas stations setting up charging stations. There's also Georgia Power. And how do you prevent them from sort of subsidizing that with the power rates that all of us pay, even if we don't have electric vehicles? I mean, there's just a huge host of issues that they're grappling with right now. And right now, I think there's a lot of question about where we're going to land on any of those issues.
Staying on the issue of regulation, let's talk about solar panels. I know you were looking into it this week.
Yeah, so a bill just passed out of committee on regulating the companies that install rooftop solar panels. Rooftop solar has been, let's say, fraught for a while now in Georgia. We have a ton of these massive solar fields, but nowhere near as much solar on the roofs of houses and businesses. And the solar industry blames all of this on the regulators, on the Public Service Commission, who they say have not done much to make rooftop solar viable or attractive in Georgia. The commission did allow this brief pilot program that led to sort of a mini boom in rooftop solar, but that filled up quickly. And then in December, the PSC just voted not to expand it. So that's sort of the rooftop solar landscape here. Meanwhile, the commissioners on the Public Service Commission are very concerned about the potential for fraud. They're worried about fake contractors scamming people, unscrupulous contractors selling people way more solar panels than they need. They say that they get a lot of consumer complaints about this, and for a long time now, they've been pushing for a more formal way to address those complaints. So during that same vote in December, the chair of the commission actually asked the General Assembly to take on this issue of consumer protection. The trouble is that the bill we've ended up with that just advanced out of committee would require rooftop solar installers to be licensed by the Public Service Commission. And the industry is really not keen on that because they see the commission as unsupportive and they're worried about what the commission would do with this new regulatory power. So that's going to be a really thorny one, and we'll have to see where that goes.
Let me zoom out a bit. Vice President Kamala Harris was in Atlanta recently to talk about climate change, and she talked a lot about EVs, particularly electric school buses, and she framed it as an issue of climate justice, racial justice. Governor Kemp is also really bullish on EVs. He says he wants Georgia to be the electric mobility capital of the country, but he doesn't connect it to the climate really at all. And I'm kind of wondering what you make of these very different ways of framing this topic.
This is such a fascinating dynamic to me, because what's happening is that Kemp and other mostly Republican leaders, both here and in other states, even if they're not pushing climate action, even if they're not really big on fighting climate change, They have recognized the potential for jobs and money from these industries that are clearly growing. And they've also recognized the need to replace older industries. Car manufacturers, for instance, have made it really clear that this is the direction that they're going in. When I spoke to the Economic Development Commissioner a while back, he explained that there's something like 55,000 Georgians whose jobs rely on making internal combustion engines one way or another. So with car makers moving away from that, you need to replace those jobs. And that's where this EV manufacturing comes in. But there's also so much skepticism about EV adoption from lawmakers in the state. The same lawmakers that we were talking about earlier who are legislating all of those issues around EVs, they're also deeply concerned about some safety issues like battery fires. And there's also just kind of a general sense of wariness that there are these federal incentives coming down. But the leaders here don't really seem to want EVs kind of forced on them, which is, it seems to be how they see it. Their idea is the market will make this happen. This is the direction car manufacturers are heading in anyway. We don't need to incentivize it. You know, even without trying to push EVs here or lower carbon emissions here, this Georgia manufacturing is a piece of a bigger national puzzle. So, you know, the electric vehicles that people buy in states like California and New York, where people are pushing harder to address climate change, they have to be made somewhere. And our leaders want that to be here, even if they are not pushing really hard on climate issues themselves.
I want to bring up one of my favorite political games, the who gets credit game. You know, when Hyundai made its big announcement down your neck of the woods, you had pronouncements from the Biden administration, Senator Ossoff, Governor Kemp, plenty of others. Emily, what are the roles of all these players?
Oh, yeah. Everybody wants credit for these EV plants and for the solar manufacturing plants. I mean, it's a huge amount of money and jobs. And honestly, you know, I don't know how often this happens, but I feel like this is a case where everybody really did play a role. The companies have made it really clear that the tax incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act are a big part of why they're building or expanding in the U.S. That's something that Ossoff and Senator Warnock pushed really hard to pass. And they also pushed to help make sure, you know, things like making sure Hyundai vehicles actually qualify for those tax credits. And of course, the Biden administration has championed that bill and pushed EVs in other ways, like electrifying the federal fleet. So there's a lot happening at the federal level to make this happen. And then at the same time, Kemp and other state leaders really aggressively went after these manufacturers like Hyundai. I mean, they've given them massive incentive packages to bring them, you know, they were going to come to the U.S. because of the things happening at the federal level. But Kemp and these other state leaders, you know, really, really pushed to bring them to Georgia specifically. So to some degree, I mean, the credit really does spread around quite a bit.
So much to follow here. Emily, this has been fascinating and really helpful. Emily Jones of WABE and Grist, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Emily. And hope to visit you in Savannah soon. Sam and me loved when we came down there. I wanted to wrap up with an update on our former WABE politics editor and co-host, Susanna Capiluto. A couple of weeks ago, she said goodbye to us here on the podcast and on air. Well, now we can tell you what's next for her. She's not going far. She is NPR's new Southern Bureau Chief. So congratulations to Susanna and congratulations to NPR.
Gold Dome Scramble is a production of the WABE Politics team. Our producer is Kevin Rinker, and our managing editor is Alex Helmick. You can get more Georgia politics with our sibling podcast, Political Breakfast with Lisa Rayum. It is out every Wednesday. We will be back next week.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.